Welcome to the Real Estate Radio Show, your ultimate guide to everything real estate. Whether you're a first-time buyer, a seasoned investor, or thinking about selling, we have the insights you need. Your host, Larry Shackman, the real estate therapist and a top-producing broker, will break it down weekly. We'll dive deep into market trends and speak with industry pros about everything from pricing and negotiation strategies and staging tips to financing options and home inspections. This fast-paced, ever-evolving market doesn't have to be overwhelming. We are here to guide you through it. Today's show is brought to you by TrustedAgentUSA.com. Get your market value, explore your selling options, and choose your closing date. Go to TrustedAgentUSA.com and do real estate your way. You've got options. Licensed in Illinois. Number 475-145-795. Now, let's dive in. Here's Larry.
All right, everybody, welcome back. And we're happy to have you here. It is Thursday, the 6th of February, 2025, and this year is flying by. Next week is Valentine's Day. This Sunday is the Super Bowl. Got a lot going on, including a little bit of an ice storm outside. We'll talk to Dylan about, make sure his knee held up. We are going to be joined by Dylan Kramer at Neighborhood Loans, and he's the sales manager over there. He's going to give us some insight on rates, what's going on in the mortgage industry, and what we can expect in the future. We're not really into prognosticating on this show because no one's ever right when they do that, but Dylan's going to give it his best shot. Hey, let's bring him on now. Dylan.
What's going on, Mr. Man? How are you?
How you doing, buddy?
I'm fantastic, buddy. Good to see you.
You're in the office. You're doing your thing.
Ed,
how's biz going?
Selling loans. You know what? It's fine. It's, you know, there's a lot of stuff on the plate in life, and it's just busy. Yeah. And but let's not confuse busy with profitable. Though oddly, we have a pretty good January, and we're trying to figure out February. So here we go.
Yeah, I hear you. Like everybody, right?
Exactly. Right. You know, we're all hand to mouth in this business. You know that.
So, you know, I always start the show out by saying, hey, welcome to the show. We're coming live to you from the virtual studios, the WIIFM. What's in it for me? So
right.
What's in it for everybody out there today? We're going to talk headlines, a lot of discussions going on out there about things like clear cooperation, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. If they shut that down, will that affect, you know, mortgages? Will that affect how people can expect to deal with mortgage brokers, banks, and others? And so we'll get into all of that. But before we do, I have a huge announcement to make. And I did a little video that, you know, on my way into working out, I thought I'd do a little video rather than, you know, make some big, long announcement, which I'm not going to do. Let's play the video, and then we'll jump into all the headlines.
Sure. Let's see what you got.
Hey, real quick, I'm just headed in for a quick workout here. But before I go in, I just wanted to, I'm excited. I mean, we were just chosen to be the exclusive marketing arm for Trump Tower Gaza. Pre-construction sales have started, so give me a call. Listen, get in now. There's a few condos left, and let's go. Let's do it. Trump Tower Gaza. Let's go. All right, so I just wanted to really quickly give everybody a heads up on that because, you know, get into pre-construction prices, you never know, right? I thought maybe you'd be interested.
I am not, mostly because I don't know that I can get enough time away from the office to get to that part of the world for a 10-day or 2-week vacation on a second home. But I also, just as a business person, I'm not sure that I trust anything with the Trump name on it to actually apply my deposit correctly at the end.
Well, all right. But don't say I didn't give you your opportunity.
All right. Comedy hour is over, Larry. What else you got?
you could always be and be it.
Good luck with that.
All right.
Good luck.
So all kidding aside, we got a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about, like I said, Clear Cooperation, the Financial Protection Bureau. Supposedly, they were sent an email that said cease all operations. Mm-hmm. So what exactly does that mean? Blah, blah. We'll get into all this stuff. So before we jump into the headlines, let's talk about what's going on with rates. Last time I checked, we were at about 7.13. That was yesterday, I think.
Yeah,
and I don't know where we are now, but give us.
Rates are in the low sevens, and you know they're down from the 7.5 that they were closer to after the immediate aftermath of the election. And we think that rates are going to spend this year around here. You know, now if I really knew where rates were going, you've heard me say this a dozen times, Larry, that I'd be a retired bond trader instead of doing this.
Right.
But I think that upon information and belief, look, there are only three potential outcomes for rates. And I think that one of the things we need to talk about is that people lose track of the third one. So, you know, we had low rates for a long time, right? During COVID, we had artificially low rates. And you've heard me talk about the idea that rates were 5.5 or 6 for years, right? But at the end of the day, if you go back 20, 25 years before the aftermath of September 11th, when the Fed really started to intervene in the mortgage rate market, rates were about 6.5 or 7. Well, the Fed has stopped intervening in the market the last couple of years, and rates immediately kind of settled back to 6.5. That's the going rate for money in a kind of normal economy, right? And so this is where we're at, and I don't know that this is changing much. I think that in the bell curve of possibilities, right, we have a wide section of rates about here. There's a very small chance that the current administration and their policies literally crash the economy, crash jobs, right? If they're successful, lay off half the government, right? Which put aside the politics of that, put aside the, expected efficiency, et cetera, et cetera. I think that ultimately that puts people out of work in a way that, remember, the Fed has two mandates, inflation and employment. And it's going to spike the unemployment rate, and will probably at that point have the unintended effect of potentially raising or lowering rates dramatically, right? Because people, it'll slow the economy, but it'll be a lot of pain associated with that. So if you're still employed, you get to keep your job, you'll experience lower than we have now rates, right? Fives. After that, who knows? But the other third possibility is the economic policies of the current administration are a disaster for the economy. Meaning, look, one of the things, and you know, I said this earlier kind of tongue-in-cheek, but now I'm not being tongue-in-cheek. The reality of Mr. Trump, the business person, is that he's a growth-oriented person. And so he'll be fine if we have 8% growth, even if it comes with 6% inflation, because it's better in his mind than 2% growth with no inflation, which ultimately is equivalent, right? And for years, the Fed has tried to manage low inflation, moderate growth in a way that's good for the economy in the long run. But that 2% spread between growth and inflation is the same. But what if you get, you know, 10% growth and 6% inflation? Like, you know, all of a sudden you start seeing things that can spike rates from here. And so one of the things I think people under consider is the fact that there is a possibility out there that we could have higher rates in the future. I mean, the last time this guy was president, rates went from 4.5 to 7. So could they go up 2% from here? Sure they could. Will they? I don't know. I have no idea. But I do know that when we talk to home buyers and we talk to people who are frustrated about the market, if you're qualified and it's time to buy a house, you're qualified and it's time to buy a house. Because think about it like this. If rates are 7 and you buy today, and in 3 years, rates are still 7, you'd be like, okay, it's fine. You probably never regret not renting anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
If rates are lower, you'll have refinanced and grabbed those lower rates. But if rates are higher, rates are 9, you'd be like, thank God I bought when it was 7. So, you know, I mean, I know it sounds a little bit like a broken record, like, hey, is it a good time to buy? Oh, it's always a good time to buy. I just think that if you're qualified and it's time to go out into the marketplace, rates have not been our friend for a while. There's no reason to think they're going to get better anytime soon.
I'm going to agree with that. I think there's, you know, we're always hoping that maybe, and in an earlier show, me and you did a couple months ago, I was thinking that rates would maybe come back down to about 6.5% sometime this year, 2025. I'm having strong, and they may, but I think we have as much chance of rates going up to 8.2 or 8 or whatever, sure, as we do of rates coming back down to 6.5.
Because, absolutely.
I mean, you know, Dylan, one thing, I don't care what market we're talking about, whether it's the real estate market, I don't care if it's the stock market, you know, whatever, markets don't like uncertainty. They don't like chaos. Yes. Unless you are short selling stuff. I mean, you know, traders can make money either way, whether the market's right down, whether it's up, just depending on what your strategy is.
Yeah, not, but we're not so talking about traders per se.
What's that?
Right. I said, we're not really talking about traders here.
No, we're not talking about the real world traders. The economy. So what I'm saying,
people making decisions about their housing, right?
Exactly. So with the real estate market, that's not what we're going to see. You're not making money. Can you make money in a down market? Sure. If you're an investor and you're buying flips or you're buying, you know, properties, distressed properties, you know, in real estate, you make your money on the purchase, right?
Correct.
So that is, you can still make money, but at the expense of a lot of people having a lot of problems. So I'm kind of in that same thought pattern that you are, that, you know, rates could easily be at 8% a couple of months from now. They really could be.
Sure.
And they could stable out. Nobody knows. I mean, so anybody.
Larry, I think the highest probability here is that rates are flat for the entirety of 2025. I just think that is your highest probability. But I think that your second highest probability is higher rates, not lower rates.
I agree with both of those things. You know, it's funny because my wife and I just found an old settlement statement from when they bought a house. She bought a house years ago. It might have been her mom's house, actually. 12.1%.
Yeah.
When they bought. When I bought my first home, 7.5%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Look, what about you?
You know, I got into the mortgage business. I did one of those weird option arms.
Okay.
Because when I bought, I was single and I was only in the mortgage business for about a year and I had a nice down payment, all that sort of stuff. So I mine is artificial, but I will tell you that year I got into the mortgage business was a refinance boom. And it was because rates had moved from 10 to 8.5,
mm-hmm,
and people were refinancing like crazy. Mm-hmm. So look, the world keeps spinning and people keep making decisions. And at the end of the day, you know, things happen and they happen less now, but you know, we're 4 years into rising rates and all of a sudden you can't put life on hold anymore, right? Kids graduate, kids move out of the house. You need to upsize, you need to downsize, you get a new job, you get divorced, somebody gets sick, you can't make your payments, right? All these things happen. And as the world keeps spinning, more and more people spin into the current market. Now in your bedroom communities, like in Elmhurst where I live or some of the other suburbs in the near collars around Chicago, there's no inventory for your kind of average house, right? Because everybody's staying, everybody's kind of stable. You know, if you have multiple kids in school, that sort of thing, you're like, well, I could stay here 12 years. I don't care where rates go. But that's the exception rather than the rule. You know, things are kind of returning normal in the rest of the marketplace and properties will turn over.
Yeah. So we're seeing some more inventory out there, right? But that's primarily because houses are staying on the market longer.
Tell me about that.
What's that?
Tell me more about that.
Yeah, well, you know, market times have gone up fairly dramatically. And the reason for that is just the economic, the dynamics of the market that we're in right now. Rates continuing to go up, buyers on the sidelines, sellers on the sidelines, because they really don't want to sell from a 5 or 4% mortgage into a 7+% mortgage, let alone a 2 or 3% mortgage, which right. people back in 2020 and 21, whatever. Mm-hmm. And certainly those people aren't going anywhere. So new listings coming on the market, it's happening. That's real. Right. That always right. happens at the For beginning sure. of the year, but not like we'd like to see. However, inventory is being bolstered by some of the older listings that aren't selling as fast, and prices are going down as well. So they're going down for houses that stay on the market longer. Yeah. Let's put it that way.
You know what? That makes sense. Look, that's a normal market functioning like a normal market, right?
Yes. Yeah. That is a normal market. The problem with it, though, is there's still just not enough inventory out there. You know, there just isn't. Like you were alluding to in Elmhurst, same thing in Naperville where I am, same thing in most places. So, you know, we haven't built for 15 years.
Yeah. The way I mean, we've discussed that at length, right? There's not enough new construction being built. There's not enough new rentals being built. And the fact of the matter is we're in the heart of this 5 or 6 year window where the biggest bulge of births since the baby boom are moving to their 30s, where they're setting up households, having kids, need the schools. And so, yes, I think that the one thing that you have for at least another couple, 3 years is strong underpinning of values.
I think you're right. Get into that a little bit. Explain.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, look, the housing demographics and, you know, for all the things that, you know, we have the opposite problem, although it has the same net result for you and me, right? So 15 years ago, we had nobody who wanted to buy and we had no transactions. Now we have nobody who wants to sell, or far fewer people who want to sell. And so that's a problem. But for us, it manifests the same way, right? Like, hey, there's not enough transactions around. But the reality is it's for two different reasons. And so, you know, if you look at the birth death charts, actually the U.S. birth chart since like 1940, there's an absolute dip down in the late 60s, early 70s, right? For birth rates. And it coincides with a couple of things. It coincides in large part with the legalization of abortion and Roe v. Wade. And I don't want to make it political, but it certainly the amount of unintended pregnancies or unwanted pregnancies that did not go to term drops dramatically. Add to that that you also had a lot of initial women's liberation sort of conversations going on in the 70s, and women chose to have less kids. And all of a sudden you woke up with those 25 years later, right, in 2007, 30 years later, as the people who were born in the early 70s reached their late 20s and early 30s, and there were 5 million less of them than there had been in years previous, just a few short years earlier. And so as we got into liar loans, no money down, you know, all that stuff that we've talked about over time, that is kind of part of the common knowledge about the 2007-2008 crash, the dirty little secret is there were 5 million less households being set up.
Yeah.
So they stopped constructing. But if you look at the birth death chart, or you look at the birth chart and you spike up and you go forward into the late 80s, early 90s, from about 89 to 95, we have the largest jump in birth rate since the baby boom right after World War II. In there, those people are now 28 to 35 and are set up in a spike to set up households. And so we were joking 10 years ago about all these people in their early 20s living on mom and dad's couch, failure to launch, blah, blah, blah. But look, human nature is what it is. and people turn around and they find each other, they couple off, they set up households, they have kids. And at some point, you got to live somewhere if you're going to turn around and send your six-year-old to the public schools. You want to live wherever you think that those public schools work, right? Whether it's Elmhurst or Naperville or Orland Park or what, or somewhere in the city, like whatever it is, you need a house. Like you don't necessarily, like you have to do that. That's the reality of the situation. You can't live on mom's couch anymore. Plus your mom's no longer 60 and willing to put up with it. She's 80 and not willing to put up with it.
Yeah.
Plus you can't bring your wife and kids to your mom's house.
Yeah, I think that all is correct. And I think, you know, there's a lot of things that are just causing the market to be where it's at now, most of which we just discussed. So, I mean, you know, people, I think the people that are really out there now, the buyers and sellers that are the sellers that are on the market, the buyers that are out there and really serious about buying, they have to move. They're in a position where, you know, you just life is driving you to do that. You have to do it. There's no waiting anymore.
Correct.
So, and those people are always going to be out there. And so we'll see what happens, you know, time will tell.
I agree.
So let's get into some of these headlines real quick. Okay.
Sure.
And the first one I want to talk about is one that's been kind of, you know, bantered around out there for a while now with agents, brokerages. I'm not sure how much the public is, you know, paying attention to this, but clear cooperation within the listing of a home. Now, let me ask you, are you clear on clear cooperation?
Not at all.
All right. So what clear cooperation is it's a policy that's set forth by the NAR, and it requires a listing to be put on the MLS within one business day of any type of advertising or most types of advertising. So if you're in Ohio and I just got your listing and I do a public facing social media ad, the next day, according to clear cooperation, that property needs to be on the MLS. Now, if you're in that Ohio market and they don't have a private listing network like we have here in Illinois, you're going directly to market, going right to the, you know, the live MLS, if you will, out there for all agents to see. And a lot of sellers, they really don't want to do that immediately. They want to not necessarily have a pocket listing, but they want to maybe put it on the market and market it for 7 to 10 days first to build up some momentum and that whole strategy, which works. I do that. It works. I don't do it with all listings, but it does work. And it's just about how the seller wants to handle their listing. So a lot of the argument is, well, and just to give you some ideas of what type of advertising they're talking about, wherein if you do it the next day, that property has to be on the market. Things like yard signs. You put a yard sign in front of a house, according to clear cooperation, the next day you need to be live on the MLS. If you do any kind of digital marketing, any kind of social media marketing, the next day, you got to be on the MLS. That's what clear cooperation says. And some of the argument is that, you know, I'm working with Dylan and Dylan, I just put his house on the market, but Dylan doesn't want to go live immediately on the MLS. Dylan wants to, you know, put his house on the market and market it for 7 to 10 days. Maybe put it on realtor.com coming soon. Maybe do a couple of social media ads. But he doesn't want to go on the MLS the next day.
Why doesn't he want to go on the MLS?
Well, because maybe his broker has given him a couple of different options of how you can market your home. And he says, no, you know, I'd rather do this because if I can avoid all the showings and avoid 25 showings the first 2 days where I'm in and out of my house, I'd rather not do that. If I could sell it by being on the PLN or just marketing it in a more stealthy manner, if you will, maybe they want to do that.
I don't like it, Larry.
A lot of people do.
Well, here's what I'm going to tell you. I've not heard of this, and so
you haven't heard of what?
Clear communication or whatever this is.
Clear cooperation.
Clear cooperation. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You don't like clear cooperation?
I don't like what you're describing here in terms of this. Here's the thing. When you start talking about, I'm going to drum up some interest over here. I've talked to agents who are like, I got this thing on the private network. I'm working this angle. I'm working that angle. And what it does is it if I'm the seller, if I'm advocating for the seller side of this and why you should do it, my argument would be, why are you not opening it up to the widest range of potential buyers humanly possible as quickly as possible? And I think that there might be, as you've described, some legitimate reasons on a case-by-case basis. But for the most part, I feel like there's been a lot of not entirely transparent listing agents who are cutting side deals with their other friends and making other things happen. And it's not necessarily in the best interest of the seller. It's in the best interest of the deal or making a deal. And ultimately, it's more in the best interest of that listing agent. And so I would argue, as I listen to you, look, whatever the rule is, and it seems like this rule basically says, look, if you start publicly marketing, you need to be publicly marketing in its entirety. That's what it sounds like to me. And I don't really see why that would be an issue. And if you're going to privately market. But as soon as you make it public, make it all the way public.
Yeah. So, I think there's a lot to what you said. The benefit of listing a property initially, maybe like in Illinois, on the PLN, the private listing network, before you go directly to the MLS. Sometimes if you get an interested buyer before the house officially hits the market and they feel like they can sidestep multiple offers and everything else, they are very, in a lot of cases, very likely to come in considerably over list price.
That is the
advantage.
Right.
However,
And again, if I was advocating for the sellers, I'd be like, well, we want the multiple offers. Like, I understand that you might want to skip them and maybe I make more money, but let's vet that out.
Well, that's exactly what's going on here with all the conversation, because a lot of sellers, they don't want to be in and out of their house over a 2 or 3 month or 2 or 3 week period.
Totally get it. I totally get it. The thing is, Larry, like we talked a lot about in the last year and a half, and we haven't talked about it much, and I don't want to go down the rabbit hole again about the lawsuit, right? And the way that it's changed compensation. But the crux of the lawsuit was, you guys aren't being transparent in the way that this is negotiable. This commission is negotiable in how it's paid, right? It seems like it's, like we talked about the pre-printed contracts at 6% and all the other blah, blah, blah. But the thing is, it was, hey, you're not being transparent. And I would, if I was making the case for the seller versus the selling agents, the listing agents, I'd be like, I want as much transparency as possible throughout this entire process. So yeah, as soon as you're publicly marketing, I want you to do it publicly marketing in its entirety, which includes the MLS.
So now what do you do with the seller that doesn't want to do that, but yet there's this clear cooperation rule out there that you have to follow? What do you do?
I understand that. Then you got to non-publicly be marketing it, right? And that might be,
but you're breaking the law.
And now you're texting your agent friends. You're not making a social media post, right? You're communicating privately so that you're not.
Well, in Illinois, it's a little different because honestly, once you're on the PLN, Dylan, you're on the MLS. any good agent is looking for properties on the PLN.
Right.
And the PLN, I believe, is now open.
It's almost the pre-MLS, right? Like it's not really a private network.
If you're an agent and you're working with a buyer and you're not looking on the PLN, then you're not doing your job.
Well, and that's kind of dopey too, right? Like, I mean, I think that you could eliminate the PLN in its entirety, just call it the MLS. If you want to turn around, you know, if you work at Joe's Remax or whatever, to pull a name out of the hat, and you want to text all the people at Joe's Remax, like, hey, I took this listing at 123 Main Street, whatever town we're in, and it's going to go live on the MLS next Thursday. But if you've got a buyer between here and there, let's talk. Like, that's privately marketing, right? To my people who work at the same shop. We're not broadcasting it.
Well, that's
generally
a pocket listing.
I don't have a problem. I get that. And so, but the thing is, like I said, as soon as it gets in the, I understand the logic behind making this argument. Like, as soon as it's in the public space, it's got to be out in the entire public space, not just picking and choosing. So I don't necessarily have an issue with it. You're right. There are cases where you're like, well, what about this? What about that? We say that in the mortgage business all the time too, right? Well, what about the guy who's self-employed, or what about the guy who just changed jobs, or what about, there's always a what about for every rule.
Yeah. I think, like with everything, clear cooperation is, there's two sides of that coin, right? And,
for sure.
But I kind of agree with you in that, just be completely transparent.
Right.
Just be 100% completely transparent. And, which is going to bring us to our next, thing. I'm going to put my glasses on here because I want to talk about this. Cause this, I think, talk about transparency. I don't understand this at all. So let me just see here real quick. Okay. So, you know, DOM, days on market, right?
Right.
So every listing in the MLS has a little category there, which shows you when the house is on the market, what are the days on the market? How long has it been on the market, right?
Right.
And what's the value of that? I'll let you explain that.
Well, look, at the end of the day, I think that there's a general public perception on any particular property based on how long it has been on the market. And so the newer it is, the better it is in theory, right? And the thing that's happened over the last few years that I've really started to argue with people about is this idea that, you know, you can always come on the market higher and then reduce your price later. And it worked the same way. But the most important thing is, look, the days on the market is a kind of shorthand that everybody uses to decide whether the property is worth looking at location. And that's a real problem from a marketing standpoint if you don't get that property viewed by as many people as possible, as quickly as possible. The longer it goes, people just assume the property has some sort of stink on it, and then they don't want to be involved.
Yeah, that's really it. Days on the market just gives consumers an idea, as well as brokers, an idea of how long the property's been on the market. And then you're going to ask questions based on that. I mean, there's a huge difference between a property coming on the market and 4 days later having 15 offers on it, and a property being on the market for 90 days with no offers on it. Well, you take that.
It's not even 90 days, Larry. Like, I would argue offers in the first 2.5 weeks, already in the water, and the market's decided you got it. Your price to have on it.
Yeah, I think.
By the way, also, just I don't know if you're watching your news feed. Rest in peace, Virginia McCaskey.
Oh, really?
Oh. Yeah, yeah. Today's
I'm sorry
day.
To hear that. She was an awesome lady.
102.
Awesome lady. God bless her. I'm sorry to hear that. She's one of the McCaskeys I actually like. I really do.
There you go.
She's a great lady. Great lady. Yeah. Sorry to hear that. Yeah, but I think removing days on the market is not going to be talk about transparency or lack thereof.
Well, you have dead flight.
Right?
You're right. You're exactly right. No, I want more information, not less. And yes, I get that it can be prejudicial, but what it really does is it holds listing agents and sellers to account, right? So,
exactly.
And I mean, and sellers, because if you come to me and you're like, hey, you should list your house for 400 grand. I'm like, put on for 439.9. Let's see what happens. You're like, I think that's a really bad idea. And then you
it's
wake up 2.5,
idea.
3 weeks later. Of course it is. And now you're like, well, I don't know exactly where this is all going and we have no offers and blah, blah, blah. Now you're in a situation where you're saying, you know, well, let's just leave it out there and see what happens. Because there's no account.
I think you know, with the two headlines that we've kind of discussed so far, we're kind of in agreement on this. A, clear cooperation. I think at the end of the day, that's a good thing. I really do. I think, you know, if you're marketing a home, market the home and give everybody an opportunity to see it, and see if that's the right home for them and make an offer on it. If you do it in a stealth way, it's not out there for everyone to see.
Correct.
And correct. I think there could be some problems with that. I don't think clear cooperation is going away, but there's been talk of it. And as far as eliminating days on the market, I think we both agree that, you know, if you take that away, there's something really sneaky about that to me. That will not feel
good
if they take that off the market.
All right, let's take a,
what's that?
So what else you got?
Okay, let's take a 30-second break. We'll come back. We'll hit our two other topics we want to hit today and bid everyone a farewell. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Real Estate Radio, sponsored in part by TrustedAgentUSA.com, the ultimate real estate matchmaker, saving you thousands. Now back to Larry, the real estate therapist.
All right, everybody, we are back. We're joined today by Dylan Kramer, our co-host on many occasions, and we're talking about a lot of stuff. What we're going to get into right now, so our old friend Ted Cruz is back, and he's aiming to defund CFPB, which is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And what does that bureau do, CFPB?
Well, I mean, the CFPB is in charge of literally protecting consumers, right, financially. And so they get involved in regulations relative to the mortgage business, relative to the payday lending business, relative to the car loan business, et cetera, over the last 10 or 12 years. There have been a lot of windows, right, and they got rolled out during the Obama administration. And I would argue that their job is generally necessary. However, it is also a place where there's been large oversteps, and Richard Cordray, who was the original director of the CFPB, really was bringing the hammer to mortgage companies over really small violations that got blown into being bigger ones over time, right? And so there were, you know, places where look, one of the reasons that we have to, you know, if we talk about rates, one of the reasons I talk about the general level of rates, right, rather than 7.25 today or whatever, is because I don't, if I tell you rates are 7.25, I have to tell you what the APR is and what the monthly payment is and what the, you know, details are on that. And we don't have an example that is really about that, right? Because, but if you put it in print and you're like, hey, 7.25 rate available, well, it's got to be minimum 740 credit score, 20% down, 7.379 APR, right? Et cetera, all those things have to be there. And so, you know, back in the early days of social media, there was a lot of companies picking up $10,000 and $20,000 and $100,000 fines because, you know, loan officers speaking out of turn on, you know, specific things that were deemed to be rate quotes, which in the normal course of things are the, you know, just kind of the general discussion of business, right? And so that sort of thing is, has moderated. I think that the CFPB for Republicans is still a little bit of a sticking point, but much like Obamacare, it's a sticking point because it came to be during the Obama administration. And a lot of the protections that the CFPB offers consumers have been healthy overall. I mean, you know, say what you will politically, for example, about Obamacare. The one thing that I can tell you, I on one level hate the following result from Obamacare. My insurance is twice as expensive monthly than it was, and it covers about half, means my out of pocket is more. I mean, it's ridiculously expensive. On the flip side, what's good? I've never had anybody who I know, like, love, appreciate, complain to me that they're no longer covered for their pre-existing condition. Like, that hasn't happened in 10 or 15 years. And these are the trade-offs that we decided to make when we elected Obama and got Obamacare. And so I would tell you that there are some trade-offs that we have figured out with the CFPB, and this idea that it just has to be completely blown up is typical Ted Cruz bullshit, frankly. And you know, I don't think it's going to go anywhere, because at the end of the day, one of the things the Republicans do like to do, and I'm sorry, I'm getting a little political, is they like to make rules to tell you how it's going to be. So I don't think they're going to.
But meanwhile, they want smaller government. Without getting in at political here, I mean, you got to pick a side here. You can't have both. But anyway, so the CFPB, they're like a lot of drugs, right? There's good things about them, but then there are bad outcomes or
consequences. Exactly. For sure.
So it's like everything, right? Yeah. I mean, there's good and bad. But do you come in and just blow the whole effing thing up?
Well, I think one of the things that we're having as a result of the current administration, and you can agree with it or not agree with it, but this is how they're doing it. They're coming into everything that they're looking at, whether it's the payment system, whether it's all these executive orders, including the birthright citizenship thing that's going nowhere. And they're basically declaring, this is our deal. Stop here. And we're going to assess it all and try and figure out what our deal is going forward. And so just stop. And so effectively, that's what they're doing to the CFPB. The CFPB has kind of issued an order internally. They're like, really not working on this stuff right now. We're going to figure out what our priorities are going forward, and we'll work on those. And everything that was a priority previously is not.
Yeah. And you know what? I don't just throw that out, you know, and say, hey, that's not a good thing to do. Because it's always good to, when if you're coming into a situation brand new, to evaluate things. Every department in the government could use shoring up. Every department in the government has fraud and waste and all that. It just is, right? But it doesn't mean you come in and stop government appropriated funds by the Congress with USAID, for instance, and just shut it all down. And same thing with CFPB. You can't do that.
They're doing it. So we'll see where it goes.
Well, they're doing it, but they're currently being challenged in court. And, you know, look, neither here nor there, Democrat, Republican, whatever. America has three separate branches, equal branches of government. The Congress is in charge of the purse strings. We all know that. We learned it in eighth grade government class.
Sure.
You can't come in and just blow that up and say, hey, we're going to stop all these appropriated funds from going out because we want to look this over.
Right. What I'm going to say next is less a political value statement, but is definitely a political statement. I think one of the agendas of the current administration is to grab power from the other two branches and be able to wield it later in this administration. And so at the end of the day, that's part of what's going on here.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with that. I think you're exactly right. And a lot of weird stuff going on, but I think at the end of the day, we're probably in agreement on CFPB, and that is good organization, good, you know, their ideas and what they're there to accomplish, good thing. Could that sometimes get out of hand and need to be kind of reined in? Yes.
That's why we had that. That's why they went to court and used the other branch of the government. So
but here's the thing, though, without CFPB, who is protecting the consumers out there?
That's the other thing, is we would have to go back to a 50 state hodgepodge of rules and regulations, and it's a real problem. So we'll see. What else you got for me, Mr. Man?
I don't know.
What's our fourth topic?
What's on your what's on your agenda?
I have no agenda, man. I'm here for your agenda, buddy.
All right.
You called the ball.
I'm sorry to hear that, but
I'm just a squirrel trying to get a nut in life.
I hear you. I'm right behind you. What's the future of the MLS? You know, a lot of talk is going around right now about a national MLS, which I think would be a great thing. I really do. You know, you want to move to California, you're living in Chicago, and you're thinking about making a move to Cali or Florida or wherever. I want to be able to go on and take a look at stuff. Now, you can do that on Zillow. You can do that on Realtor.com. I think the MLS should be a national MLS, too. I think there's an easy way to do it. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that that is an easy thing to do, and I concur with you. I think at the end of the day, you have all of these, whether they're state, city, six county, whatever, realtor associations all have their own MLSs with their own different coding. You're all paying the same fee, which we complained about last year, to the National Association of Realtors. Get a National Association of Realtors MLS, figure it all out, and yes, put it all under one umbrella in the name of full transparency, which has been the theme of today's call.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it would be a great thing for consumers, for agents, for brokerages. I think it would be an awesome thing to have a national MLS. And so here's the thing. We used to have 1,000 MLSs, right? We have whittled that down to 500 MLSs. So we know it can be done. Of course, we know it can be done. So now, how do we take it from 500 MLSs all the way down to one national MLS? I'll tell you how we do that. Google. I mean, you could partner with a large, you know, media, digital media partner like that and do this.
Yeah, it's easy. The fact of the matter is, it's not only easy, it's cheaper, it's more transparent for consumers. Yes, 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 and yes. Do it all.
Yeah. Yeah. So lots of crazy stuff going on. I think we've covered a lot of it. I definitely agree with you on that days on the market thing. I think if we remove that, it almost seems sneaky to me if we remove that.
Yeah, no. I'm here for more transparency, not less. Removing data is not more transparent.
Yeah.
Period.
What do you got going on? You working on any nice deals?
Nah, nothing, you know, usual stuff. A couple of refis here, a couple of, you know, transactions. We helped somebody move to Tennessee last month. We helped somebody buy a place in Oak Park that they're going to do a bunch of rehab work on. We're financing the rehab work. So, you know, there's a few interesting things cooking. It's good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, man. Well, it was awesome having you here as always.
Thanks, buddy.
And
I appreciate it.
Yeah. We'll talk again very soon here.
You got it, my friend. Thanks for having me. I'll talk to you
soon. All right, man. I'll see you. Yeah. All right, everybody. That was Dylan Kramer. And Dylan's an awesome guy. Decades, literally, of experience in the mortgage business. And if you need some help, either getting pre-approved or getting a second opinion, give Dylan a call. His information, his contact information will be in the notes. So give him a call. Also, if you're looking to buy or sell, give me a call. This is a crazy market. There's a lot going on in this market. If you're looking to buy, you're going to run into multiple offers on a lot of properties. You want to know how to maneuver through that. I've been doing this 24 years. I'll help you do that. If you want to sell, contact me. I will send you our hard copy of this four-color marketing plan. It's a 24-page marketing plan. It's going to tell you exactly how to sell your home for more money in the quickest amount of time. And we talked about that a little bit today with clear cooperation and how that all plays in with how you market your home. So, give me a call if you're looking to buy or sell. Remember, if you're a listing agent, listingagentadvantage.com, you're going to be able to offer your sellers seasoned closing attorneys and legal services at no cost and discounts on title services. That's going to save your sellers $1,000 minimum guaranteed every time. Check it out, listingagentadvantage.com. Having said that, you know, like I said, this year is flying by. I mean, this year is just screaming by. So we're headed towards Super Bowl Sunday. I'm going to go with KC. I think Patrick's going to do it. I think he's going to get that three-peat. But I'll tell you this, it's going to be a tough game. Philadelphia is tough, and they want this bad. So this is going to be a great Super Bowl, and Kendrick Lamar at halftime. I'm expecting a great show out of that. You guys have a great day, great weekend coming up, and I'm going to wish everyone out there a happy Valentine's Day, because that's going to happen, I believe. No, actually, we'll be on the air next Thursday again before Valentine's Day. So either way, you guys have a great weekend coming up, and we will talk to you again soon.
Thanks for joining us on Real Estate Radio with your host, Larry Shagman, the real estate therapist and top producing broker. Now go to TrustedAgentUSA.com and save thousands when you sell, buy, or invest. Illinois license number 475-145-795. Tune in next week for the ultimate real estate radio experience.